Today's podcast is brought to you by Every Wednesday, a plan to inspire the people of Portland and support the place we call home. Let's get out of the house and spend some time with each other. Skip Zoom, meet for coffee, take your colleagues out to happy hour. Buying a gift? Ditch the internet and support a local maker by shopping in-store. Head into town every Wednesday and see what's going on at everywednesdaypdx.com.
Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week, where every Saturday we discuss the biggest news stories of the week with Portland's noisiest newsmakers, savviest culturistas, and some of the best journalists in the game. I'm your host, Brianna Wheeler, and I want to hear from you. So send your questions and comments to me, bwheeler@wweek.com. All right, y'all, enjoy the show.
It's time for another round of Willamette Week endorsements! Endorsements? What? Yes. So this week's cover story is, yes, a fascinating piece by pod bestie Anthony Effinger. But, y'all, there's an election right around the corner. So rather than shrooming with Anthony today, I'm unpacking endorsements that appeared this week with managing editor Aaron Mesh. Y'all want to hear me ask him if he thinks the all-white, overwhelmingly male newsroom is an accurate representation of the readership these endorsements are meant to appeal to? Do you think his answer changed from last time I asked? Place your bets, homies. It's Saturday, April 29th, and this is episode 121 of The Dive.
When you've been in public life and you make tough decisions, you get your elbows out sometimes because you need to do that. Sometimes you're going to make people unhappy. And certainly I've done that in the time that I've served.
Today we're discussing two endorsements of particular note. First, Multnomah County Commissioner for District 3, Julia Brim Edwards, who you just heard, over Anna Del Rocio.
Portland is not the only city in Multnomah County. So we have 8 cities, 13 unincorporated areas, and several census-designated places. I raise this technicality because I think it's important to listen to our rural community members who rightfully point out that we can be far too Portland-centric, and specifically downtown Portland-centric, when talking about local governments.
What it is basically attempting to address is the disparity in legal representation between landlords and tenants in eviction court, because the process, the legal process, is so important.
But on a year that
and
you
just,
saw
and
the
just
toll.
My point about this, if it was a tax on the top 1%, then it should have been designed as a tax on the top 1%. And to your question about an economic downturn, well, we are in it. And there is no necessary likelihood that we can resume and expect that we'll actually have population and economic growth in our region. And we are different as a region. We are not like other places. Our recovery is vastly slower than every other part of this nation. So all those points, they're well taken. Should have designed this as a top 1% tax. Should have excluded issues like home ownership and the sale of it. You should have excluded retirement accounts and not impacted individuals who are at their end of life. These are all completely rational perspectives, and yet every single one of them is built into this ballot measure and will become law if voters say yes.
That was Colleen Carroll, volunteer for Eviction Representation for All, the campaign behind Measure 26238, and Andrew Hone of the Portland Business Alliance and the Building Our Future Together Coalition, which is campaigning against the measure. Aaron and I will untangle the effects of a yes vote on Measure 26238 and break down why the team is endorsing a capital N-O no vote. I'll nail Aaron down for a chat in just one sec, but first, here's what I learned from this week's edition of Willamette Week. Nike co-founder Phil Knight and his wife Penny have pledged $400 million to invest in North Portland's historically black Albina neighborhood via the nonprofit, the 1803 Fund. The first project is dubbed Rebuild Albina and will focus on investments in education, place, and culture. By the way, Phil wants to buy the Moda Center, which is in the Albina neighborhood. Anthony Effinger reports that the ballot measure that legalized psilocybin mushrooms created an appetite that the regulated market seems unprepared to satisfy, resulting in an expansion of the decades-old illegal market. And mark my words, you're never going to catch me paying somebody $3,500 to trip-sit me. Because that's how much it could cost to legally swallow 4 grams of psilocybin mushrooms and undergo a 6-hour therapy session. That definitely doesn't sound like a nightmare. And in case you're pondering an inaugural warm weather weekend road trip, Ezra Johnson Greenough gives us a guide to Bellingham, Washington's beer scene. Now, let's catch up with WW's managing editor, Aaron Mesh.
Willamette Week only endorses in meaningfully contested races, which means contests in which two people appear in the voter's pamphlet, or obviously in the case of measures, we endorse in all cases because even if there's not meaningful opposition, voters need to know what kind of choice to make. The point of us putting out these endorsements, and I think sometimes it gets a little lost because so many advocacy groups and business guilds put out endorsements that are essentially statements of solidarity. Mm-hmm. And we're not offering statements of solidarity with the candidates or the measures, meaning that we're not saying that we stand unreservedly behind any of these people. You look at, for example, our reporting this week on Secretary of State Shamia Fagan, who we endorsed in her bid for that office. And now we're looking at some serious potential ethical violations that may end her career.
Yeah.
I don't look back on that and think, oh gosh, I regret having endorsed her because of these revelations, because that endorsement, again, is not a steal of approval. It's an attempt, along with voters, to try to understand what we think and help them think about the decisions they have to make.
Mm-hmm.
We're picking from the best of some possible worlds.
So how many people are voting when you guys are, you know, making your endorsements? Six?
Six.
And you feel like of your six team members, this is an accurate representation?
No, it isn't. It is not.
Why is that?
It's because it is too white and too male.
Hmm.
A problem that Willamette Week is extremely and painfully aware of and that we are seeking to rectify.
Mm-hmm. County Commissioner, District 3. Who are our choices?
This is a fun one. This is actually probably the most interesting and most difficult, this easily the most difficult decision we faced.
Yeah.
So this is Anna Del Rocio, who is running against Julia Brim Edwards and Albert Kaufman. Kaufman is a really nice guy and a long time, I believe he's a consultant, but is not running a serious campaign here. Raised no money, has no endorsements, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Del Rocio is a longtime grassroots advocate who has worked in the Latina community, has worked as a David Douglas school board member briefly. She has left several positions, including the head of a nonprofit and David Douglas school board, which she left midterm. And then Julia Brim Edwards has been on the Portland School Board for 3 terms, although not consecutive, and was a long-time executive at Knight. As we say in the endorsement, it essentially boils down to the question of Brim Edwards' track record,
mm-hmm,
versus Del Rocio's potential. So she has enormous potential, and I hope to see her again running for office, but it's a little tricky, and I realize it's impossible to unpack this in a way that will satisfy everyone, including myself. But it is difficult to gauge how effective she would be in this office when she has not stayed in any of the work that she's taken on previously. So until we see some proven track record, it's really tough to know for sure what her constituents would get.
It's experience that's experience beat out potential for this particular endorsement.
Yeah, and there's an interesting sort of paradox there, right? Because, like, at some point, you have to let potential take over. Otherwise, like, you're only going to get the same old people over and over again. But I think in this case, one of the deciding factors for us was the fact that that Brim Edwards has finished the things she started and that Del Rocio also has had opportunity to finish the things she started and did not. So it's not as if we're saying, here's one person who has lots of experience and another person who hasn't done it yet, and we're going to gatekeep so the person who hasn't done it yet doesn't get a chance. We're saying that she's had multiple chances and hasn't fulfilled them. And so it's a tough sell for voters, I think, to say that that's trustworthy.
Experience versus potential. I'm not aware of every accomplishment that Brim Edwards has made, but could the argument be made that experience got us where we are now?
Yes. Yes, it could. You could make the case that that the problems that we currently see in the school district and in the county should be laid at the feet of Julia Brim Edwards, given that she's been in power during the time that these things went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is an argument you could make that that she holds some responsibility. I think that the counter argument to that is that things that she did achieve during the time that she was in office are things that counteract the problems we're seeing in the city.
Moving on, for school board position in Zone 3, the team chose to endorse Derek Peterson?
That's right.
What gave him the edge over his opponent, Patty Sullivan?
Well, he did seem to have a greater grasp of what the district does and had some proposals for how it might change. I am not tremendously excited by his candidacy. He's a longtime corrections deputy, and frankly, I don't really love someone who's been involved in the prison system trying to correct the school-to-prison pipeline. He's just not a candidate whose background excites me very much personally as someone seeking this particular office. On the other hand, it does not appear to me that Patty Sullivan, his opponent, hasn't any real qualifications for this office at all, given that she's never attended a school board meeting, had little grasp of what the school board does. It would have been very difficult to endorse her in this race.
Help me unpack Measure 26238, the funding eviction relief services with capital gains taxes. What is the basis for y'all's opposition?
It's an incredibly poorly constructed tax. There is no other tax like it in the country. There's no other city, county, any jurisdition that taxes capital gains to fund eviction relief or eviction defense. And there's probably a good reason for that, which is that attempting to collect it will be highly difficult. Will in the first few years require as much as half of the money that's collected to go to administrative costs. Other cleaner ways to fund the thing that it seeks to fund, one of which is to use existing tax dollars that are intended for very similar services.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a homeless services tax measure that is currently being used to fund eviction relief, to fund making sure that people are not evicted so that they can pay their rent and not be thrown out onto the streets. Some of that money could easily be used to provide legal defense for people who face eviction. It's not at all clear to me that this measure has crossed the bar of, one, being able to prove that it will actually improve lives of the people it's intended to help, and two, will not have unintended consequences because of how poorly it's constructed.
What kind of unintended consequences are we talking about?
Well, the one that I find most alarming is that it's going to be retroactive. In other words, there are people who have already actually racked up things that will be, in other words, transactions that will be taxed. These transactions have already occurred. And most disconcertingly, that includes the sale of homes.
Mm.
So people, especially the elderly in our community who have sold homes trying to have some savings of their last years, may discover that they have a tax waiting for them they didn't know about when they sold that home.
Is the language of this measure such that it could be modified so that those unintended consequences could be avoided, or is it just?
Oh yes, it could be. It could be. Then that, and that's what the advocates for this measure say should happen. They say that Multnomah County should fix those problems. Here is where I am going to engage in a certain amount of healthy skepticism and say that if someone comes to me and says that they will gladly pay me tomorrow for a hamburger today. So in other words, vote for my thing now, and tomorrow I promise I will fix it. I am not sure that I'm going to accept that deal.
Rightfully so. So you also said that there's already money for these services, or money that could be allotted to this. Why hasn't that not happened? Or is that happening already?
Well, not enough, in my opinion. So, again, there's no disagreement from our editorial board, and certainly from me, in the need for lawyers, or at least people with legal training, to represent people in eviction court. I say there's no disagreement on that. Maybe that's not quite true. There's a little disagreement on that, in that some of these cases are simply non-payment of rent. Actually, a lot of these cases are non-payment of rent, and there's not that much that a lawyer can do for you if you haven't paid your rent. But that's stipulated. There are many cases in which people need legal services because they are facing eviction for reasons that are unfair and have no recourse because they cannot afford a lawyer. And unlike in criminal cases where, you know, the law and order, like, bump, bump thing says that, like, if you do not have the resources for a lawyer, one will be provided to you. That's not the case for eviction court. So there is a need for this. And so I'm answering your question in a really roundabout way to say that that we agree on the need, that there is money available to put toward it, and here is where advocates and opponents of this measure break in their views. And I actually don't know how I feel about this next part. I'm just unpacking it for you. Advocates say that they spent a lot of time trying to convince Multnomah County and state officials to put money toward this. Use the pot of resources that you currently have to deal with this problem. And they found no political will from elected officials, and so they had no recourse but to go to the ballot and to create a new funding source to fix this problem. That's their contention. The contention of opponents of this measure is that there was no good faith effort made by the advocates behind this measure to seek that funding from existing sources or to persuade elected officials to actually use the money they have. They just wanted to create a new faucet to spend from. I don't think that's something that I can offer a real opinion on without doing more reporting about the process in which this came to be. Right? Like, I think that it would be unfair of me to, like, put my finger on one or the other solution, an answer to that mystery. Ultimately, when it comes to the decision on this ballot measure, I think it's irrelevant because the money does exist, and whether or not it's the fault of current elected officials or the advocates, someone can go turn that faucet on. It reminds me a little of the cannabis dollars controversy that happened with Mingus Maps and City Council. Recently, where there was this question of whose fault is it the money hasn't gotten spent? Is it the fault of the city office that controls the money, or is it the fault of the nonprofit that would have spent the money? And again, I think ultimately the question's a little bit irrelevant. You need to spend the money.
Yeah. Big thanks to this week's guest, Aaron Mesh, and thank you for listening. I hope you'll listen again next week. Until then, bye!